I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Now, the person that joins me today is actually not Mr. Jules Gill. Turns out Jules Gill had a whole bunch of renovation going on directly above him. So he's been talking about how there's buzz saws and different chain saws, all these different things going on. So I thought, well, what other person could possibly live up to the man than someone who's just as good? So it's Mr. Josh Brown himself. How's he doing?
Thank you very much for that introduction. I don't fully agree with it, but I will happily take that praise and run with it. I'm doing all right. I'm doing much better since you asked me to do this, actually, mm-hmm. Scott Tilford, because I got the second jab yesterday.
You did,
and
didn't
I'm it? Feeling a touch of grogginess afterwards, a minor side effect, not feeling too bad. But I was feeling that today, then you came in with this request, and I thought, you know what, that's the perfect way to see off my Friday afternoon. So I'm much better now and very much looking forward to doing this with you. So thank
it's
you,
genuinely.
Mr. Buzzsaw Man, who's yeah. outside Jules's house doing whatever he's doing with those saws, because it's benefited me.
Apparently there's some building, some room above him is getting completely converted. So he's trying to squeeze voiceovers in between chainsaw noises. And he was like, can you just try and find some other way to do the UBP? I said, well, I can do exactly that because I've got a beautiful person in mind. And I will say that you getting your second job, the life that's like exuding from you is beautiful to see. I think it's a lovely, lovely thing. Considering that we've both been waiting for it for months and months, it is awesome. But thanks to everybody for sending in their questions. Obviously, initially thought those questions would go to me and Jules. I'll probably do a rollover next week because we got a fair whack stuff through. But at the same time, thanks to everybody. There are some really cool questions in here. And I thought me and Josh would try and get through as many as we can. But yes, this is the Entitled Banter Podcast. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown. First question from HP Craft Ass, great name, who says, Star Wars anime, yay or nay? Mr. Josh Brown, you hadn't seen the trailer for this before we started recording.
I hadn't, but now I have. And it's 1.15 minutes of just gloriousness, isn't it?
It's pretty good,
isn't
it? It's
not my thing. I'll right. say this right out the bat. Oh. It's not necessarily my thing, and I might not necessarily watch it. But I was looking at this trailer just thinking, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. That looks awesome. What's this? What's going on? This looks mm-hmm. amazing. I feel like if it is your thing, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it will be it just looks like the best thing ever because it's got such a look to it. It's got such a personality. The animation is so good and I hope the show lives up to it.
That's the thing is that I kind of looked at it going like, you're doing whatever you want with it. Like it is ridiculous. There's one bit, there's a lightsaber umbrella at one point where a guy just has like 12 lightsabers spinning around on an umbrella where he's deflecting stuff. And there's a bit where a woman seems to throw out like tendrils of lightsabers and one guy blocks all of them and wraps them all around his lightsaber. Like it is very insane. I did kind of go, because I love anime. I love the Animatrix, love the Matrix, love that approach to like Animatrix style of just doing like a series of different tales with a bunch of different animation studios. Like, what can you come up with? And that whole idea is really, really cool. At the same time, because it is blown so out and it is so crazy, I kind of just thought, what even is this? Like, it doesn't need to be Star Wars. It could just be a selection of cool stories. Like, if the rules are, if you can bend the rules that much and break them that much, then what even is the Star Wars brand? But at the same time, if you go back to what George Lucas's initial mission statement with Star Wars was, where he initially planned out 12 movies and he was like, oh, going forward after all this, Star Wars will just be this like toy box that you just give to different people. Like, here's lightsabers, here's the Sith, whatever, do whatever you want. And I think that in many ways, like that, this whole Star Wars Visions is the name of this anime thing. Stays true to that the most. It's just like, okay, like what are these different anime houses want to do with this stuff. And they are really cool and really varied. And also shout out to the Animatrix. That thing got completely overlooked. And I, Josh Brown, you're the only other Matrix fan that I know on this earth. So
nobody on this earth, I'm confident in saying, likes the Animatrix as much as you do. It's come up so much this week. Is it coming back in vogue? I don't know what's going on with it.
I bought it off YouTube the other night. I haven't watched it again yet, but I've got it on DVD and everything. And I was just like, just what a time that was. Like, everyone sort of abandoned the Matrix after like 2 and 3. But for those of us who stuck with it, the Animatrix was a beautiful thing. So it's that approach to making content, I think, is a worthwhile thing. But next question from Joshua, who says, played the Tales of Arise demo, and I'm very excited to play the full game, though I wasn't that much before. What was the best demo or beta for a game that you played that totally made you way more interested in playing the full version? Great work on What Culture. Hope y'all doing great. Well, thank you to you, and same to you. For me, there's only one demo that comes to mind for anything like this, and it's Metal Gear Solid 2.
Yes!
Is that what you're going
to
say?
That's the one! That is the correct answer to this question. Sorry,
ding, ding,
go
ding,
on.
Ding, ding. No, the only thing that potentially disqualifies it is that it wasn't something I wasn't that interested in before, but if we're talking, you know, legendary, everything to do with Metal Gear Solid 2 was, like, mythical at the time. Like, just, even if you go back to it and watch footage of it now, the graphics are still impressive. Like, that thing was so ahead of its time. And all the different footage of, like, Snake on the, I think it's the Verrazano Bridge, before he dives off onto the tanker. It was just so stylish. We were in the right time for it as well, early 2000s, slow motion Matrix style action stuff. But like, dude, I mean, Metal Gear Solid 2 is up there. My favorite teaser ever is Halo 3. My favorite actual demo thing is Metal Gear Solid 2.
Yeah, man, it's like the best thing since the Animatrix, I would say. It's just it was so good. I was a little bit young for Metal Gear Solid 1. I had it on PlayStation, right. And I played it on PlayStation, but I didn't have the skills to complete it. So that was a game that I watched my dad play. He was actually a big fan, and he was looking forward to Metal Gear Solid 2 and got the demo disc. I think it was from a magazine.
Did you not get the Zone of the buy Zone of the Ender so you could play Metal Gear Solid 2? Because I did.
I did not do that. I did not like Zone of the Enders, actually, Scott Shelford. I know, I'm so sorry.
Very, very, very quickly, right? If anyone wants to go back to Zone of the Enders, because in your mind, if you've not been back to Zone of the Enders in a while, it's a really cool mech combat game. The reality of that game is that Hideo Kojima was horny AF on main. Like, that game, literally the cockpits are in the crotch. It's a literal cockpit. Anyway, carry on.
Is Hideo Kojima being horny on main not every one of his games, though? Like,
yeah, but we came onto that in like Metal Gear Solid 4, where it was like, oh, why are the bosses like magazine models? And it was like, oh, the posters in Metal Gear 2. It's like, well, the posters are a bit full on. But then you go back to it, sure, and it's like, no, just full on robo erections left, right, and center.
I'm sure he came onto it as well. But
Friday,
yeah, Metal Gear Solid 2. I know. The end of a week. What was I talking about? Metal Gear Solid 2. Yes, that demo. Just want to echo everything you just said. But I was, you know, so excited to play it because this was going to be a Metal Gear Solid for me. I was old enough. I was ready for it. And I must have played that tanker sequence just over and over, watching the ice cubes melt, trying to hold up everyone I could see, trying to get through it as fast as possible, trying to do runs where I killed everyone. And it was just such an intriguing sandbox. You know, you had Olga, the boss fight with Olga, you had sneaking through and taking pictures of Metal Gear Ray. It promised so much, and in my opinion, the final game did deliver what it promised, just obviously not in the way that it promised.
Well, there is all the ride and stuff. But for the tanker, I mean, I remember thinking that all the limb damage was really cool. That if you hold up someone, one of the guards, and you can shoot them in the legs, and you shoot them in the leg. But if you shoot three of their limbs, they die. And I that whole thing I thought was mind-blowing at the time.
If it ever turns out that I'm a serial killer, or if I'm ever caught for being a serial killer, because I might get away with it, I think my origin story would be that part of the tanker machine.
Torturing the guards.
I spent so long just seeing what would happen if I shoot these guards in the neck, in the arms, with tranquilizers.
I remember trying to show my parents, because I'm like, oh, dad, come see this. Look, if I shoot him in the leg, he hobbles on it. Look, I shoot him in the arm, he's bleeding a lot now, dad, look. And my dad just not even laughing, just going like, son, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing this to these people? And it was just like bodies and, oh, you can drag the bodies, dad. Look, I've made a pile over here. Like, what are we doing?
I have a similar story with them. I think it was Assassin's Creed 2 or Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, because I used to always get them for Christmas. Mm. And I was playing one of them downstairs, my dad was watching, and I just sort of hidden bladed some innocent dude. It like went through a row of them and just hidden bladed them all. And my dad, again, not laughing, just kind of looked at me with a little bit of curiosity in his eye and asked, did they deserve that? And I couldn't answer it. I was like, I don't think they did. That?
That's a really good learning. That's a really good learning moment, because you had to be like, no, I don't think they did. And then you probably never did it again, or at least not in front of him or whatever. Because it's always that thing when you play a game. Like whenever I play a game with my wife, and it's like some, I've got to escort like an NPC, I'm immediately going to turn around and see if I can punch them in the face. Like I'm immediately going to see if I can blow them up or whatever. And she's always just like, well, why are you doing that? And I'm like, I've got to know. I've got to know what the rules are before I escort them. But yeah, we probably would both say Metal Gear Solid 2, because even as much as we were going into it being psyched for it, there was something about actually playing Metal Gear Solid 2 that I feel just elevated everything. That game is phenomenal. Next question from Harvey Mireles, who says, what is your all-time go-to snack and drink for a night of gaming?
Love this. Yes. Can you take it first? Because I'm going to have to think, because there's so many options.
Well, the thing with this is, because it's a big old sort of like go-to, almost like a stereotype, that there's going to be, oh, pizza and gaming. That's a hell of a combo. But the reality is you can't pizza and game unless you give no S's about your controllers, which I didn't used to when I was way younger, but then they just get all gooped up. You know, like I can't eat some pizza and then play a game without washing my hands thoroughly in between. Otherwise, I'm just going to make the controller bad.
Fully agree. And, you know, if I offend anyone with what I'm about to say, please chalk it down to the vaccine side effects. But yes. I think people who eat pizza while they're playing video games are just outright perverts, because you smash the pizza grease into the controller, you get bits of cheese and pepperoni or whatever you're having, pineapple and ham all over the place.
Yeah.
It's very greasy and it doesn't work. I've tried to do it numerous times.
I've tried it too, yeah.
When I went to uni and had like a disposable income for the first time, I thought, I'm going to live the dream. I'm going to get a pizza in.
Yep.
Maybe even have a few beers with the boys and play some games. And it didn't work. So I'm going to fully agree with you that pizza would definitely not
I, for the most part, don't snack in game. Although my drink will be Pepsi Max. I love a bit of the old Pepsi Max. I think in terms of snacks, though, I'm just too conscious of how much like dust or whatever it's leaving on my fingers. I just can't game like that. I need to go clean my fingers so I can like play cleanly. I don't like having like sort of weird residual foodage on my fingers. I don't like that at all. So, I mean, the last time that I went hog wild with food and games was last year's Call of Duty. I mean, every year, we've talked about this like off recording and stuff, but every year when Call of Duty comes around, you've got to have the Call of Duty weekend. You've got to get the Monster Energy in, or the different energy drinks. You've got to get some donuts. You've got to get some fast food, whatever it is. And I bought a big tray of 12 donuts, the Krispy Kremes. And I just was like, I'm just going to gorge on these. I felt horrible afterwards, but I did eat all 12 in about 2 hours and just played some Call of Duty, ate a lot of donuts, drank a lot of Pepsi, and then felt ill.
See, that's good until you start feeling ill. I don't mind the dust so much, because I'm a massive crisp fiend. Mm. My food of choice when I am gaming is some form of crisp, whether it's Pringles. Pringles is usually some form of Pringles, whether it's sour cream, whether it's cheese and onion, whether it's salt and vinegar, whether it's original. I don't mind, as long as it's got the Pringles man on the front.
I tell you what you can't have, Monster Munch, because Monster Munch is really flaky and it leaves those little bits everywhere.
That's true.
Like Goldschlager. I don't like it.
The thing is, it depends what technique you got down. If you're putting on some munch in your fingers and sucking them off, probably bad. That came out incredibly wrong.
It's 3 p.m. mate.
Or whether you've mastered the art of just eating it straight from the packet without actually touching your hands by tipping it in to your mouth, because it works then.
I'm still taking valuable time away from gaming. Like if I had some sort of like, you know, crisp grabbing set of tongs that I could maybe use, that might be a way to do it. But not to worry. Next question from Willie Araya, very quick one. Bayonetta or Devil May Cry? Not reaction.
Devil May Cry.
He also follows up by saying Bayonetta or Dante. Dante. Although, say that, no, I do love Dante, but I something makes me want to say Bayonetta. I really do like Bayonetta. I like how she's just this insane spectral goddess witch who's just doesn't like need to challenge herself for anything. She's just like, no, I've got this. My hair's going to transform into a giant panther. It's fine. Like I quite like that.
And Bayonetta has never been in a game as bad as Devil May Cry 2, so maybe she wins because of that.
Possibly. I mean, Dante, although Dante in DMC 5 just looks like Kurt Cobain, so
it's a good look, though.
Kurt Cobain with a red leather jacket on. What else do you need? I think both of them are Devil May Cry and Dante. Next question from Danny Edwards. Would you rather replay Dark Souls 3 in its entirety while taking a shot of tequila for every death, or replay Bloodborne in its entirety, enjoying a spoonful of mega hot sauce for every death? Purely based on what we're having for the deaths, and because I think I would die less in Dark Souls, I'll take the Dark Souls. I'll take the tequila.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
If it was any other shot, I would, but tequila is my Achilles heel. I'm not a huge fan of it. If it was Sambuca or Sours, Sours was maybe cheating, I would go for that.
Is Sambuca the one that you light on fire? Because I that very bad.
You can.
Very bad times.
Sambuca's the one that tastes like licorice.
Do people, yeah, people put like a raisin in it or something. Or people put like a little thing in it. I'm sure I was, maybe this is just me revealing that I've drank something that I should never have drank, but there was definitely some sort of shot with a little raisin type glob in it. And the person set it on fire and there was like 10 of them in a row. And we all did it. We all banged them back, as they
say. Was it Mo Sizzlack? Were you drinking flaming Moe's?
Flaming Moe's with cough syrup. I wish.
I think I'd go Bloodborne just because I've only played Dark Souls 3 once, and I played Bloodborne at least twice, so I feel like I know that game more, and therefore would limit the amount of hot sauce I had to eat.
Controversial take, but I've never been a massive fan of Bloodborne. It's just Dark Souls with a dash, so I'll just take the souls.
Your Dark Souls with a dash take is something I think about when I'm like in bed. My girlfriend's like, "Are you all right, man? What are you thinking about? What's keeping you up?" And I'm like, "You said it was Dark Souls with a dash. I'm still thinking about it."
I'll tell you what'll blow your mind. It's been 6 years, mate, but it was a long time ago. Next question from Daryl Hobson. I'm a lifelong gamer with very little time right now due to work, studies, and an amazing family, but with some free time coming in the next couple of months, would you suggest starting God of War, Ghost of Tsushima, Mass Effect Trilogy, or should I try and continue where I left off in The Witcher 3? That's tough. I think I would say God of War, actually. I think, because the question is, I think God of War will give you more bang for your buck, more meat per pound, isn't a phrase, but more bang for your buck than the other ones in a condensed period, because let's say you're devoting, there's about a 20-hour median split across all these games, I would say. So I would say God of War, because I think you'll be lost off in Witcher 3, unless you do want to just mop up stuff side mission-wise. But I think Ghost of Tsushima's campaign versus God of War's campaign, it's God of War for me. Like, they're close, but it's God of War.
I think so. I think if you've got the time to, like, if like they're saying, to dedicate, you know, a newfound big chunk and get lost in a game, big I think God of War's the one that you jump into. If you've got, you know, maybe half an hour at a time to play a game, then I would say Ghost of Tsushima, because then you have, you know, so much that you can do within that time period, and it won't feel like the story is stagnating or being split up in the same way that I think God of War's might if you're only doing it in segments.
Yeah. Also, he says he's, you know, got the family and everything. A lot of familial themes, a lot of, you know, if he's, if he's like a new dad or anything, like all the stuff in God of War will massively resonate. I just love God of War. God of War and Ghost of Tsushima are my top two. The Mass Effect trilogy, if you've not touched it, is obviously recommended, but that's only, I still wouldn't say the whole trilogy is recommended. I know that, I think you might these days, but I would just say Mass Effect 1 and 2.
I would do all three, just because 3 is, it just ends it. I couldn't imagine doing 1 and 2, especially when you haven't played it and not getting through that. I would definitely shout out the Mass Effect trilogy, but that would be so long. Like, if you were doing all of it, that's like over 100 hours, which is a huge sink, but they are great. And I think with the Mass Effect trilogy as well, you could take that at your own pace. Like, those games are structured where you can just fly around the moon.
You might just get so lost, though, like, in terms of like the overall drive. The thing is, I would say play Mass Effect 1. Obviously, there's a dangling, overarching plot thread in Mass Effect 1 that is the trilogy, but you still get all the stuff with Saren. You still get the whole hunt this rogue, like, ostensibly police officer who's, like, gone and done a murder, and you got to go and hunt him down and everything. You still get a lot of that in Mass Effect 1. But I think we're dancing around the fact that both of us would say God of War, these games are totally worth playing.
That's the thing. I think we're kind of dancing around the fact that I kind of want you to play all of these games and hopefully find the time at some point to play them all, because all of those games are so, so good. And I sympathize with the time constraints that does suck. But
you can't go wrong.
If you had to choose one, you can't go wrong with God of War, I think.
Absolutely. Next question from Nerd Dog with many G's, who says, "Hello all the way from New York ledges." Well, hello to yourself.
Hello.
What is your guilty pleasure game that whenever you go back to it, you spend way too much time playing? Mine is City Skylines. Also, burgers or pizza? Keep up the good work. Pizza.
Pizza? Do you think?
Oh, God, yeah. You taking burgers over pizza?
I don't know.
Think of the menagerie on both sides of those umbrella topics.
I could eat pizza every single day of my life, right? But if we're talking peaks and troughs, I think burgers might have bigger peaks. potentially.
You're not wrong, right? But the thing that I find with burgers is that, especially in the modern day, there's like a race to put as much stuff into a burger as possible. And I can never get that in my mouth. I can never get my little jaw around it. I want to, but as soon as I start squeezing it to make it work, everything flies out the side, falls out the bottom. It doesn't maintain. I've even done a thing where the burger's fallen apart and I've taken a knife and fork to it and I've just separated it into various like mini sandwiches, ostensibly. It's just,
it's always, I don't know what it is. Isn't it? Yeah, I always feel like I've kind of ruined the dinner somehow.
I mean, pizza topping can fall off, but a burger's got a higher fail rate for me.
This actually has opened up an entire different kind of pepperoni, because when it comes to pizza, I actually don't have toppings on it usually. I'm normally just a straight margarita man. Like, when it comes to burgers, I'll have a bunch of different stuff. With pizza, every time, it's margarita.
Okay, you need to go to the post office and order yourself a pizza with lots of, you're telling me that your side in this argument is based on a history of pizzas without toppings?
It's based on the preference for a margarita pizza. And I know one Andy Murray of the Wrestling Channel may back me up here, because if a pizza place,
you margarita truthers,
can't get the margarita down, then it doesn't deserve to get my love from the sides, because the margarita pizza is the baseline, it's the default, it should be the peak, in my opinion.
Okay, but is your favorite character in Mario Kart Mario? That's the question.
I mean, he's got a good hat. You know,
a lovely hat. The thing with the margarita thing, that is the test of a good pizzeria. You want to see, can they do a good tomato sauce? Can they do a good margarita? But you've got to go elsewhere over time. You've got to try a bunch of different things. You got to try the chorizo, like the pizza. There's so much out there. I can't imagine just doing the cheese.
Wow. The thing is, I will try it. But if I'm going to a pizza restaurant, I'm getting the margarita. I'm getting the margarita every time, unless I've been there multiple times. If I've been there multiple times, I might spread my wings and try something else. But I'm a margarita man, like George Clooney's a Dapper Dan man in whatever that movie is. I can't remember now.
Taking away to Margaritaville as the COVID vaccine slowly sets in. I think in terms of the game that we go back and play, spend way too much time playing. For me, it's pretty much anything that's backwards compatible that I'll get the urge. Like, we'll be writing a list, we'll be talking about it, and I'll go on one of the apps. I've got the PlayStation app, the Xbox app. I'll re-download that thing, and then I'll just dive into it as soon as I'm finished. Obviously, we're still working from home at the minute, so I can just like go across to my PlayStation or Xbox and just play that thing. So I'm losing my mind last week. Like, I spent like 4 hours on Sekiro, and then I spent like 3 hours on Tomb Raider Legend, and then I spent 2 hours on Fantavision, and I'm just a man out of time. I mean, I was waiting for new stuff. There's new stuff now. But for me, it would just, I guess, stuff like that, where I'm like, I only got this to scratch the itch, and now I'm spending actual time on it. I guess that would be mine.
For me, it's probably New Vegas. I think that's the game I've replayed the most. And it's the game that I always get the itch to play. Like, while I really love so many different games, I never get, like, the itch to go back to it. I've never sat here thinking, oh, I could go through the first half of Dark Souls again, in the same way that I think, oh, I could go through the first half of New Vegas again. Uh-huh. There's something about that world with it being so holistic. Like, I go back for the characters, I go back for the setting, I go back for the mechanics, and I also go back for the music, you know what I mean? There's so many different aspects and things that welcome me back to that game that I always want to reappreciate. And you can get that by putting on the New Vegas Spotify playlist, but it's not quite the same. I need them all to interlock.
I think my thing as well, I mean, I did a whole bunch of Hades the other night. I must have over 100 hours in the Switch version of Hades, but I was like, oh, it's on Xbox, I'll just restart it again. And sort of did a bit of that. And I think it's that whole thing of like, if you have those, I don't know, nostalgic or just general memories or general positive vibes towards a game. And for me, I want to re-experience them. And because we're in this weird state where we're in between a lot of major titles coming out, for me, I just ping pong between everything. I'm like, well, I might as well dive into 12 different, I bought Tomb Raider Anniversary the other night. I'm not even going to touch it. I've already got it on PS Vita. I was just like, well, I want it on the Xbox just to have it on the Xbox. Never going to touch it, mate. It was only because I looked at the picture of Lara shooting the T-Rex and I thought, well, I've not done that in 10 years. So why not?
Tomb Raider Anniversary, so good. Go back to
it. It's a good time. It's a beautiful time.
Playing Legend as well in Underworld.
Yeah. That's the thing. I played a bit of Legend and then I was like, I'm going to go see what Underworld's like. So I booted up my old save for Underworld and there's extra kick in that game you can't do in Legend. So I did the kick quite a lot. And I was like, this is cool. And then I got to like a puzzle, like a different tomb puzzle, funnily enough. And I was like, well, I'm stuck here now, so I'm done. And then I was like, what else can I scratch the Tomb Raider itch with? So I bought Tomb Raider Anniversary. And then I was too distracted by Windjammers and I've gone back on Windjammers. So it's just, it's a torturous life, really.
Everything you just said has given me anxiety there. Like, all of that, I could not picture myself doing, but if you're having fun with it, Have a good time.
Whilst you were slowly applying the salve that is Code Veronica X. Just that's how you get through the day. Next question from Daniel Dies at the End. Now, this question is very good. Best games to play with one hand. Broke some fingers the other week and have been stuck with turn-based combat only. Keep up the good work. I love the podcast. Now, he did do a follow-up tweet saying that he wasn't being crude about this. He has actually broke his hand. So one-handed games. I feel like this is an interesting query, because some titles, especially on mobile, have been made so you can do everything with one hand. The new Witcher game, Monster Slayer, which is actually abysmal for me. I think that thing is a horrific game that pushes you towards microtransactions at every opportunity. I really don't like it. But that mandate of just saying we're going to make something that you can just play with one hand, I think it's kind of cool. Pokemon Go, I would totally recommend it. As the complete opposite side of that same spectrum. Pokemon Go is a beautiful, beautiful game. Anything come to mind for you in terms of just like one-handed games?
Oh, no, it's quite a difficult one that I've never really thought about those terms. Maybe something like, a Telltale style game.
Exactly what I was going to say,
walking around and making dialogue choices. I feel like something like The Walking Dead, or maybe I think you could probably do Until Dawn with one hand. I don't think there are many intense moments where you need to hit both triggers or anything. And so I think those kinds of games would probably work and give you a nice thing to watch as well.
Yeah. I would say conversation-driven stuff, like either, like you said, all the Telltale stuff, which obviously we would shout out The Walking Dead. I would shout out The Wolf Among Us, the Game of Thrones game. But also, like, you know, the Life is Strange titles are awesome. Season 2 especially, I really, really liked. And the new game, if you've got Game Pass, 12 Minutes is out, which I know is very divisive. I didn't massively like it, but it has really cool ideas, and you might find yourself liking that. That game is very much a point-and-click, so it's literally just going to be moving the analog stick to something and then A for something else.
I've got one as well. Disco Elysium. You can definitely play Disco Elysium with one hand, because that's just point and click. That's just doing dialogue choices and making choices. I would definitely shout out that.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything, because when we mentioned the Telltale stuff, there's probably a couple decisions in that where you need to respond quite quickly, or you need to move the cursor into that spot and then hit the button to get through some things. I think you can turn those things off in the options. I think there's an accessibility option that lets you turn those things off. Assumedly, hopefully, most titles these days, if they're quite recent, should have sizable accessibility options to help you with that stuff. Hopefully any of them. Next question from Jacob Wright, who says, hope you're doing very well, Legends. Well, thank you very much. What games are you looking forward to playing at the end of the year? At the moment, mine is Pokemon Diamond / Pearl. Now, me and Josh have done this on the main podcast the last few weeks, but I thought I would leave this in because just very quickly, I'm just going to check in. When I say to you, what game are you looking forward to for the rest of the year? What comes to mind?
I say Deathloop first and foremost. Really looking forward to Deathloop. And it depends if it has, it seems like it's officially been delayed, but Sony hasn't mentioned it. So if it hasn't, then Horizon.
Yeah.
Really looking forward to that. And the game that I partly bought an Xbox Series X for, not Halo Infinite, Sable, that indie game with the Japanese Breakfast soundtrack, still buzzing for that. Those are the three games. And also maybe a bit of Halo as well.
A cheeky little bit. Halo is definitely mine because I'm just so curious what that thing is. That's kind of it. Like there's not, what?
I've forgotten a big one. Battlefield 2042, I think it's
the 2042
game title. That's the one. I'm just
mildly curious about that. We just did the news this morning on Call of Duty Vanguard, but I think that trilogy, that whole, I like the idea of jumping between Halo, Battlefield and Call of Duty for the first time in, I mean, how long is it since we had all three of those games on the go? Like, has that been 11 years or something? So I like the idea of that. Mine would definitely be Halo. I feel like Halo's in such a weird place right now and it needs a big win. Like, it needs something that is just out and out recommendable. And Infinite looks really solid. Also, though, he mentions Pokemon Diamond and Pearl. I know you're not a Pokemonsman, but that thing looks great. Like, Pokemon Arceus for next year looks pretty ropey, but the remake of the 2006 one, like, looks gorgeous. I never played it back in the day. So I think that looks really, really cool. Next question from William Huxley, who says, hope you're doing well. I was wondering how often you guys get recognized in public by fans of the channel and how those interactions usually go. Also, the What Culture Gaming videos and podcast really brighten my day. So thank you so much for all the content you put out. Well, thank you very much. I left this in because you've told me that you've been grabbed in pubs before, or you've been pointed at it in various outlets.
Pre-pandemic mostly, and it's always really lovely. Often when we're out in clubs, which I always get I get massive fear about it waking up the next morning, because I'm like, oh, you probably pulled me when I've had like 10 pints and I'm wondering if I've been nice and I overthink it. But ultimately, it's always so lush. It's the thing I miss the most. Well, I miss a lot of things since I've been out there, but I do miss it. I miss, interacting with with people and people who appreciate it, because I really appreciate it. And I feel like often when I'm in the moment, I'm always surprised by it. Right. So I can't properly convey that I'm enjoying appreciating it. So I would like to say that now as a blanket thing, if anyone ever pulls me in the future, past or present, I do appreciate it very much. It is always very nice. And thank you very much.
Same. I mean, that's the thing. I always think that it's like, it's a really, really, it's an honor to be able to be recognized. There's millions of us, billions of us on the planet. And it's insane that that ever happens. So I'm always just like, let's have a conversation. Like I, like you said, it was one of those things that happened a lot before the pandemic. And then it was like, when I had my first train ride for the first time in a year and a half, and I was with my parents, but I don't know if you have the same thing, but sometimes you can tell when someone's looking at you a little bit too much. And I was like, and you know what? You also don't want to be that egotistical a-hole being like, totally. Well, of course they're looking at me because of this. And so I didn't obviously say anything. And then as I was getting off, this guy was like, oh, thanks very much, man. Like, oh, I really like the channel and stuff. And I was like, oh, mate, thank you. I wish I could shake your hand, but I can't. And it was that thing where it carried over. I was like, this is really cool. My thing is, I always try and have like a full conversation with someone. And most of the time people are up for that stuff. But there was one time when someone came over in like a pub and I was sitting with my mate and he like leaned in to say like, oh mate, just, you know, watch you on YouTube. Thank you very much. And I was like, oh mate, just sit here. Let's talk about this game. And he was like, I'm just saying that I like your stuff. I don't want to be your actual friend. I was like, well, I don't want you to come with me. I'm not going anywhere. But like, I thought that's what you want. But you know,
you're a nice lad. I have one of the last things I did before lockdown happened, before the pandemic happened, was I was out in Glasgow seeing the 1975. And the night before, I was out with my friends. We went for a few drinks. Mm-hmm. We were walking back to the hotel, and it was such a good moment because I'm always worried when I go to new cities. I'm scared that everyone wants to kick my head in no matter where I am. So we were walking down this alley. Yeah, and I wasn't really comfortable with the city, so I was a bit worried. And I just saw this guy like looking at me like outside of the pub. And I was like, oh, no. And he's kind of looking at me and he says like, oi. And I'm like, oh, is he going to beat me up? Is
this guy going to beat me up? Why was that your default? Why would he just go, hey, random person?
I'll tell you why. Not to dive into too much past trauma, but it's because I've been beaten up too many times in the past when I was younger. Uh-huh. But that's an entirely different thing. Anyway, this story has a happy ending. So yeah, he went, oi. And then he said my name and he was like, Josh Brown. And he said, Josh Brown from What Culture? And I was so relieved and so happy that obviously he'd noticed and approached me that I literally, because I'd had about 5 pints at this point, we both went way. We kind of like ran over to each other, hugged each other, had a nice little moment. Uh-huh. And then I can't remember the guy's name, which is a shame. But I remember that is like one of the final things that happened before lockdown. I have a fond memory of that moment that I'm like, yeah, I love like the people who, you know, obviously listen and watch us and stuff. They're always so sound and like,
I like
meeting new people and I miss those interactions, man, because they always turn out really well.
Yeah, man, same. I'm looking forward to just getting to do public events again, just being outside again and that kind of stuff. It's also like just an insane thing as well is you don't realize what kind of reach like the videos have, because it's just like when I got recognized in New York City, which I thought was insane, and then I got recognized in New Orleans, and it was just that thing of like, oh my, like it is that genuine just feeling of like, oh man, like I said, it's an honor to be able to be seen by you. Like that's the general, like to everyone who's listening, that's what I mean. Like, but yeah, next question from Matt Delaney. On a scale of 1 to 10, what's your hype level for the next Dead Space remake / franchise going forward? Plus, is Chatty Faces gone for good? Sure hope it's not. It is not. We just tried to make that work using webcams and it wasn't anywhere near the same energy. So we just kind of reconciled to being like, let's just wait until we're back in person. A lot of the views pretty much dropped off and it just wasn't the right energy for it. So we thought we'll just wait and we can have more of a laugh when we're back together. So Chatty Faces will be coming back as soon as we're all safe and allowed in the office again, which is hopefully within the next few weeks, but we'll have to wait and see. What's your thoughts on Dead Space?
10 out of 10. So looking forward to it. I almost re-downloaded Dead Space 1 and 2 on the Xbox Series X the other night, but I think I'm going to wait until the remake comes out. I've been a huge fan of this franchise since the first one came out in 2008. Love number 2. Really excited to see what they're going to do with the original, how they're going to reimagine it, how they're going to update it. I love that it's a next-gen exclusive, and I'm ready to tear off some limbs, my friends. I'm ready to jump back in the boots of Isaac Clarke and have a good time.
I played through the first Dead Space, like really, really liked it. Didn't love it. And then I've only played the very beginning of Dead Space 2, which I know is one of the biggest holes in my gaming like archives, that I don't have the go-to knowledge of Dead Space 2. And everyone always says that, or a lot of people say that Dead Space to Dead Space 2 is like Alien to Aliens. And I'm an alien man. So I don't even know if it's for me, but I've played the beginning of it and it seems really cool. So I might make a point of going back to Dead Space 2 before the reboot. I'm just curious about it. I mean, none of the original team are on it. I forget the name of the guy Do you remember the name of the guy, the creative director who left back in like 2010, 2011? The guy that spearheaded the whole thing? Glenn Schofield, maybe? He's working on the Callisto Protocol. So that has me more excited because if someone birthed a franchise like Patrice Desilets with Assassin's Creed, I'm always going to be more interested in what they do next as opposed to what the sort of assembled version, studio version carries on where they left off. So I'm just curious. I think the idea that it's first person is cool. But I kind of wonder, because for me, the thing that elevates Dead Space was like the way they approach the HUD and the way they approach combat, the limb dismemberment stuff. Maybe could have been done better, but their whole approach of just keeping you in the moment all the time, I thought that was really, really cool. And I just think that if you take that mind out of development, then what do those other people even think of? Because to me, I want more stuff from the Schofield guy. So I'm kind of just thinking that maybe Callisto Protocol might be the real Dead Space going forward. But we'll see. I know. A final question from The Essential Gamer from the UK, who says, why do console wars exist mainly between adults? Also, why hasn't any of the interviews with Hassan Karaman from Blue Box contained any questions that aren't belly button lint? So we should weigh in on both of these things. I don't know if it's only adults. I feel like a lot of late teens, maybe they would be almost classed as adults, maybe late teens, early 20s people yeah. tend to weigh in on the console wars.
I can only talk from my own perspective, but I feel like, you know, especially when you're grown up and especially when, you know, you become linked to a specific brand or a specific console, maybe in my case, because that's all I could afford and that's the one I had, you want it to be the best. You want to feel like you're not missing out. And because the gaming industry works so much on the fear of missing out, it kind of entrenches you to think about the consoles in that way, like you side with a brand. And I do think, without getting too wanky about it, I feel like, you know, the modern age we live in, you know, so many people take the things they buy and the corporations they buy from and then integrate that into their own personality. I'm certainly guilty of doing that exact thing, especially when I was younger and I was like, this is me. I am defined by the things that I like. I'm defined by the things that I buy. And that I feel like gives you this mentality of, well, because this is me, I'm going to defend it because it is a reflection of me, or it's what I think is a reflection
absolutely.
Of me. So you draw those lines quite hard.
Yeah. I think the major distinction, which is something that definitely comes with age or just thinking on it, maturing along with it, is that idea of connecting a brand or connecting something that you're into with your own individual personal worth and then projecting it outwards and just thinking, well, if this system's being attacked or this franchise is being attacked, then I'm being attacked. And part of me who is invested in this thing is being attacked. And it's just divorcing those two things over time. I will say that I've never got all forum posty about, oh my God, this console, how dare you, Xbox and all this kind of stuff. I was never that guy growing up, obviously engaged in a whole bunch of different fan-based debates. Most of the time these days, I kind of think of it as just supporting sports teams because you look at sports fandom and obviously there's a whole bunch of toxicity across the board for most dedicated anything belief systems or believing in something systems. But for games though, for game companies, franchises, studios and stuff, I just think of them as sports teams. If you take it too far, it's analogous to me as taking it too far in a sports context or something like that. But there is fun to be had rooting for something or like supporting your favorite franchise or supporting your favorite console. For me, there's healthy competition there. And it often breeds, you know, if Sony and Microsoft are warring for your attention, the only person who benefits is the consumer. Unless it's an exclusive, in which case everything gets locked down. But for the most part, it should benefit everybody. Hence Game Pass, massive thing that benefits everybody, mainly because Xbox need to get eyeballs on their system. To bring it back to Hassan Karaman very quickly, I feel like all the abandoned stuff, we're pretty much abandoning it, lol, because nothing has come from it. And the more people have dove into Blue Box's own history, Blue Box is only their current name. They've had about four other names. And they've also had three other video game projects that were all Kickstarter things where they took the money and they didn't run. They just set up another Kickstarter. And I feel like they've done that a bunch of times now. And the latest thing was Hassan saying, hey, if you buy their other game, I can't think what it's called now, the old Blood or something, the House of Blood, something like that, then you'll get a copy of Abandoned for free. But it's just really messy. Like they didn't deliver on the, you know, the proposed date of the playable teaser thing. They only repeated the trailer that was out there. And it just seems really all over the place. And the whole thing about the real name of the game is S, begins with S, ends with L, has just completely gone. He deleted the tweet and it's just, I don't even know what that is anymore. So I'm not going to join the band of people saying that he's an active scammer, but it doesn't seem like that team are the most reputable or believable at this point.
Yeah, no, man. I've taught you a bunch of times, whether it's on video or whether we're just talking about it. Like, the only news I get from it now is when you see some news and then you talk about it, and then I'm like, okay, so I'm done with this, and I appreciate the updates when we talk about it and the kind of madness that's going on.
You're like trying to leave the room, and I'm just grabbing, I'm pulling you back in like by one of your fingers. Like, no, you're almost out, but no, look. Yeah.
Kind of. I feel like I've been fully out with this for a while, and at this point, it's just. I don't know. I'm sick. I'm already annoyed. Right. I've spent so much brain time dedicated to it
that juice.
I'm just thinking, yeah, he's shown some legs. Yeah, the thing is being delayed.
Hey, there were some nice
legs. Other companies, there were some nice legs. But at this point, nah, I'm out. I'm out unless you drag me back in. Like,
no, I'm also fully out. And also, I was never really that in. I need to separate the nuance, the fun of chasing a conspiracy theory as a baseline thing to have fun with, and the reality of what was always there, which was that it was never going to be Kojima's secret project. It was just that it was fun to entertain the 2% chance that it might be. So I think that was always the distinction for me. The conspiracy theory side of it was always just for fun. The people who are still saying it's Kojima because of course it would be this messy and of course it would be hidden this well, it's clearly not that. And so, like, the faster the people divorce themselves from that and just take a step back, lest this become another, I don't know, insert your hyped game of choice that falls apart at the end style scenario, the better. But yeah, overall, I think we're both done.
I think so, 100%. You know, I hope it's good. I hope it turns out to be really fun. I hope the people who have invested in it get something out of it. But, like, once that gameplay thing got delayed and it wasn't up within 2 hours or 3 hours, I thought, nope.
Or a few days.
Ridiculous. Or a few days, yeah.
Yeah, that whole thing's been a bit of a mess. But speaking of being done, we are also done for the week. This has been the Untitled Banter Podcast. I'm Scott Tailford, joined by Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
You can find Josh on Twitter at Josh Brune with 2 O's. You can find me at /LP89, and we'll catch you next week. Sayonara.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.